Some arrogance is essential to the creative process. The very idea that your private thoughts or feelings are worth sharing with anyone outside your family or friends is already a kind of arrogance. Arrogance is the exit and entry point to the humiliation that art requires. Not unrelated is a dubious courage that when you find yourself out of your depth in troubled waters, you will discover how to swim. Another daft but true idea that creativity seems to depend on. Hello, everybody. Well, hello there. My name is Christian Overfield.
And I am Martha Guzman, and we are the hosts of the Rockstar Autobiography Podcast.
Join us every 2 weeks as we review autobiographies by the greatest and most famous musicians in history. We're back again. This is a famous one, just as our intro, our creative writing intro says, famous. This is a big boy. Even if you don't like the band, you have to respect the quantity of the field this band occupies. The name of the singer, the name of the man by which we all know him, Bono. He's a big boy. Yeah. And you know what, Martha? He's so big, he almost broke our show.
He really did.
I'm starting to think maybe that's why we just drifted and had to find ourselves. You know, it's funny. You two famously, I don't think you need to read the book to know, but I knew it anyway, that they almost broke up during the recording of their greatest album, I think, which is Octung Baby.
You think that's their greatest album?
You know, I think I understand. If anybody says the Joshua Tree, I'm not going to argue with them. I'm not. But I do think Octung Baby is their masterpiece. And it is,
It is good.
Oh, I think it is one of the greatest albums ever recorded, actually.
Wowza!
Oh, yeah, yeah. It is absolutely exploding with creativity.
And wow, I remember, Christian.
Oh, yeah, when I first heard that
big
album.
Big words here for big compliments here.
My goodness. Oh, yeah. Considering where we know this review is going, it is huge indeed. It's fitting, though, therefore, that as we read about Braun and tell our audience, this almost broke us. You know, we broke our bones, but we healed.
We did.
It took 6 months of internal searching, and we had to come back and face the demon that is Bono, which we've done. And I hope, Martha, I think we need to tell people what happened with Bono in this book, because it came out, you know, say what you will about us. I know some people say we're snobs. They say we're this, we're that. But we read the book when it comes out.
We do.
We don't read the book after Sinead O'Connor has passed away. Rest in peace, by the way. We read it when it comes out. Yes. So, we're on it. We're just like bloodhounds. We find the truffles in an instant. So we read this book the instant it came out. How can you not? I mean, hello, for a show like ours, we're like, this is a slow pitch over the plate. Bono? I mean, we got to read this. I mean, the ratings alone, it's going to, you and I, you know, the ratings from this podcast alone, we'll be able to put swimming pools in our backyard, right?
I hope so.
Exactly. However, our listeners may figure it out that it's been a good, what month is it? It's almost October.
It's almost October.
We're approaching a year that this book has been out. And there's a history. Martha and I recorded this episode and when it came out, we did do that. But then, I don't know if our listeners know this, we are, myself particularly, technologically incompetent in every conceivable way. We've lost more than one episode because we pressed a button that was wrong. I mean, right?
Yes.
I've heard of famous musicians. There's a great song by The Loving Spoonful called Darling Be Home Soon. It is absolutely gorgeously, beautifully perfect, I think.
Oh, I need to listen to that.
Oh, it is.
And I like the title too. Oh, I love it.
It is intensely moving. It's the kind of song, the first time you hear it, you're instantly, it's just like, whoa, that's an immediate response. It's beautiful.
What is the title again, Christian?
It's called Darling, Be Home Soon.
Oh, I love the title. I love it.
It is a very moving, very beautiful song. And when he recorded it the first time, the guy in the control room neglected to hit the most important button.
Record? Which is,
yeah. So the singer was absolutely furious because he didn't know if he was going to be able to remember it perfectly.
And oh, so the, no.
Yeah. And I that's who we are.
That's who we are.
We lost our first recording. I'm not going to place the blame. It might have been my fault. It might have.
I believe.
Whatever. You know, we're past that
whatever
place.
Happened, happened.
There's no blame game.
It's in the past. We've moved on from it. And that's all that matters.
It's, you know, I was thinking what we casually had to do to re-record this episode, which is what we're doing. Just casually read another 600-page book twice.
Like that.
Yeah.
Like just like that.
And, you know, real quick, I promise we're going to get there. We're there. We're actually talking about the book in a way. We're like, you know who David Goggins is, Martha?
David Goggins? I don't. Who is he?
To me, he's this incredibly irritating man who can't stop running everywhere he goes and screaming into the camera about how hard he is and how he's going to carry the logs. And he screams profanity constantly to people about how they got to be getting out there and ripping it up and working harder. And
yeah,
he's super famous. He's super famous to a certain group of people for being this intense, aggro, masculine dude who runs like 100-mile marathons every other day.
Okay. He's kind of like Johnny Marr.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Me, Johnny Marr, and him would be friends.
Yeah. And we're like the David Goggins of book reading. It's like not a problem, son.
I love that we're just like marathon runners. But when it comes to reading and pages.
Oh yeah. It's just we are it's like I thought you actually had a challenge for me. You just want me to do what? Oh, okay. I thought I was gonna break a sweat.
What? Russian novels, 600 pages of Bono's memoir, whatever.
Like, oh, you mean foreplay? Oh, okay, we're still doing that. You know, I promise we're going to get there. I saw a documentary about this race, Martha, where these people just run the same three miles, okay, over and over and over. And there's no end. There's just the last person standing. And the guy who has won it every year, he's always disappointed that no one's there to challenge him because he makes it, he runs for 28 hours straight.
Wow.
No, there's no sleeping. You get to sleep for 1.5 hour every 12 hours.
Oh my gosh.
And I know it's going to gross you out. I don't mean to, but it's part of it. He's even using the bathroom as he's running. By the end of the race, he's broken his toes. His muscles are knotted into pieces. And he's
and
always,
the purpose being
just point, and just? When he wins, he's always mad. Like I was waiting for the challenge to begin.
Is that who we are, Christian?
Yeah.
Is that who we are? We're just waiting for someone to challenge us in the reading department.
And to bring it back to Bono, the title of the book is Surrender. And it's like, no, we did not surrender.
Not surrender.
Yeah.
We almost did. It almost broke us.
Yeah. If Morrissey's novel cannot break us, nothing can and nothing will. All right. I'm sorry. That's a lot. But, you know, this episode was hard on us. And so
it was emotionally distressing.
It was
the aftermath of this. The aftermath of the first recording was emotionally exhausting.
It was. It was.
Yes.
Okay.
But we've come out of it. Okay.
We've come out of it. We're back. And I you know, it's just like with U2 and they came out with their best album ever, I think. And even if you disagree, Martha, I'm sure you think it's an achievement. You know,
absolutely.
Right,
absolutely.
Yeah.
My favorite album. Well, we can start talking. About
sure.
That
sure. Why don't you? What is your U2? Where do you put U2 in your landscape of music?
I will share. I actually really liked. I was a big fan of U2 when they first came on the scene. And those early albums, I owned them all. And I really enjoy them. And coincidentally, Christian, I hadn't really listened to the music a whole lot. I mean, there's certain songs that I do sometimes revisit and listen to occasionally, but I hadn't really listened to some of the albums until we started reading this book again, right?
Oh, okay.
And so I think our first take when we first read it, I was telling you, like, oh my gosh, Christian, I'd forgotten just how much I really like some of these songs. And I really had forgotten that they have some really great music. And, you know, I think that my favorite album is Boy. That has always been my favorite album. Oh. I just think it's so different from everything that came after that one. Mm-hmm. I think that their sound, I still obviously like their sound, but Boy, I think is very distinct and has a very distinct sound to it that just kind of has lasted through time and has stood the test of time. And I really enjoy listening to that. But obviously, you know, the Joshua Tree, I mean, they have some really great stuff U2 does, right? But I did, you know, kind of stop listening to them. I would say around the early, mid-90s, I just kind of started tuning out the music a little bit.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, everything else got in the way of the music for me, you know, the Bono stands on so many things. And, you know, granted, a lot of the things the issues that he champions are valid, and I agree with him on some of those things. But overall, you know, I'm interested in music, right? I want to hear the music. I don't want it to necessarily get clouded by other things. And not to say that people shouldn't have their opinions about things. I think everyone should have an opinion, and they have the right to. But I just want to hear the music. And that kind of started getting in the way of it for me. And, you know, I will tell you this. As you know, I was recently on vacation, and on the way back on the plane, you know, it was a kind of a long flight. And I thought, what's in the in-flight entertainment? Let me browse through this, right? And I was trying to see whether I wanted to listen to music or watch a movie, I was like, oh, no, let me see what I can listen to while I'm up here. And I'm a very nervous flyer. I'm never comfortable on a plane. I'm very, very nervous, and I'm very jumpy. And I have to say that there was a playlist, a YouTube playlist. And I thought, you know, let me see what songs are here. And the playlist actually included a couple of my favorites. And Christian, I actually got very relaxed to the melodic voice of Mr. Bono. Okay. I totally relaxed at one point where I almost started dozing off, which is unheard of for me on a plane. And it was all thanks to him. So coincidentally, now we're doing this episode, and it was like perfect timing for me to share that Bono's voice really soothed me 35,000 feet on the ground. Yeah. So thank you, Bono.
Thank you, Bono. Forget your charity work. You soothed Martha on her stressful trip to Kauai.
Yes, thank you, Bono. Thank
you. I mean, let's really get a sense of proportion here about what matters. Martha with a little vodka soda and a reclined seat on the way to Kauai. She felt better.
But you know, I also want to briefly mention someone very dear to me. I think I've shared this with you, Christian, that so many of my most, or not many, the few very meaningful friendships and relationships that I have with some of my favorite people in the world have resulted or have come to fruition as a result of music. And U2 was a band that really connected me to a very, very, very dear friend of mine who sadly passed away last year. Her name was Michelle, and she was a huge, huge U2 fan. And when we met, when we were both 17 years old, we were both big U2 fans, and that was sort of what cemented our friendship. I kind of drifted, as I said, you know, away from them a little bit, but she never did. And she loved U2. She used to listen to us while she was going through some very harsh treatments. She used to listen to this podcast. So I just wanted to mention her because she loved Bono and U2. And she would always tell me, when Bono comes out with a book, you guys have to read it and talk about it.
Yeah, so, here we are.
Hi, Michelle.
Hi, Michelle. We're doing that now.
Yes.
I personally think when you said to have some really good, I don't know, however you described you two just now, I think to me that's underselling how big some of their songs are. Just monsters of.
I agree with that.
They're
right.
They belong in the absolute top shelf canon of. I mean, you can play the opening lick to Sunday Bloody Sunday to anybody.
Yes.
And
New Year's Day.
You name it. And I mean, yeah. And you know, it's fact. I knew somebody and she told me she was, I think, like 18, 19. I casually mentioned the song One. Right. And I said it in such a way as if it assumed, of course, that she knew what I was talking about.
Right.
And she didn't. She had this blank look on her face. And I couldn't fathom that a human being could live in life without actually knowing of that song. I mean, to me, some of U2's music has reached that plane of, like it or not, you're aware of certain songs. And I think a lot of their songs deserve. It's like, you know, the best in a perfect world, a Renaissance world, the most popular music is also the best music. And some of U2's music did that. Everybody liked it and it was amazing. And, you know, and I mean, there's just too many songs to, I'm sure their greatest hits album is a double album. It's just that huge. I mean,
they have amazing, amazing music. I mean, that's undeniable. Absolutely undeniable. And the fact that it's been the same four guys.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. To me, they're just a monster band. I have a lot of fond memories of some of their music. To me, they were always a little too big a band for me to identify with in an intimate way. That makes sense. Like the Smiths.
Yes.
Yeah, they were just huge. So
yes.
I got really into them, though, in Octung Baby, because I just really thought it was a ferocious, awesome achievement. Just it exploded into the universe in this incredible way. I'll never forget. And I listened to that album from start to finish just over and over and over for just, I can't even remember how long. There's not a duff track on it, as they say. It's just, I always use baseball metaphors. I don't know why. But
I know, you're not even really that much of a
sport. No, I'm not. I know, but it really is. It's just like,
what's happening to you?
Each one, it's just like out of the park. It's just watching a home run derby. It's they were for a while.
Wow, now you're mixing in horse racing.
No, I'm not. Is it a home run? No, I think the home run, the all-star thing is a home run. Did I mix the two? I might have.
Well, I'm thinking of the Kentucky Derby. That's why.
Right. But yeah, but I'm just like you after Octung Baby. Boy, it just got old. Oof. The ridiculous look they wore. They were so ostentatious in the. I know it was meant to be satirical, all that.
Yes,
pop,
it was.
But it just was.
In their defense, it was.
But it was.
Lemon!
Yeah, like I get it, dude. But it's just too much. Just tone it down. And also, we're having to deal with these ridiculous stages and Bono's calling the president every night, which is irritating. And he's got this ridiculous. And it's all great and fine if the music's up at that level, but it stopped being at that level. I think Zooropa was the last time I love that album. And after that, I just don't know. I don't own a single one.
Yeah, there's some good stuff in Zooropa, actually.
Oh, I love that one. But after that, it's just to me.
What was that sound?
That's my fart sound.
Oh, my God. Why?
Well, it's taken a while to get to the book.
We need to get into this.
We are, though. What I mean by the fact that we are, it was we're delaying the inevitable, Martha.
We had to
reread the book, and I almost texted you that, man, this book is just as boring the second time as it was the first time.
there are some highlight parts, though.
Oh,
I think
boy.
You
should be in politics.
What did you say?
I said you should be in politics.
Let's start at the beginning. You know, I always like the beginning of these stories because to me, it's the beginning where that's where the exciting stuff happens, where the tone is set for what's going to come and for the excitement of starting the band and getting the record deal and everything in between. So I think we should start there. And then move to the more unpleasant part of the book.
Okay. Martha, you know,
that
it's not...
That deep sigh.
This book, again, I have no problem with what you're doing as a philosophy, but the book, he doesn't tell the book in a way that I think we can... I mean, we can try, but the overall failure of the book, if I need... I just want to get that out there, is... I forget which book we were reading that had the same problem. There are no stories.
Oh, right. Well, we've read a few that are like that.
It's sometimes impressionistic. It's very journal entry like. It's very emotive. And I don't think he's got the chops for being the writer that he thinks that he'd like to be. And so I want a story, dude. And they're not there. Here's what I'm trying to say to you, Martha. If you've got the story of you two, I am all ears, because it's not in the book.
I've got a little bit of the story that
tell
he shared
me.
With us.
Please tell me.
I've got a little bit of the story that he shared.
Let's
start at the beginning. And this is going to be brief, everyone, because as Christian said, there's not a whole lot of story. There is a lot of the manner in which he wrote this book is similar to what others have done, where it almost reads as though he took notes or entries from journals that he maybe kept or that he's kept throughout the years and just kind of noted some of those things down. He does tell us a little bit about the beginnings of the band, right? And so, you know, let's start there.
Okay.
Let's start. I mean, I think anyone who's listening who's a YouTube fan knows the way that the band started. And that is, you know, Larry... put out an ad essentially saying a drummer looking for musicians to start a band with. That was basically the ad. And Bono, along with The Edge and Adam, responded to that ad. And that's sort of the way that the band got its start. Yeah. They then start organizing shows. Actually, it's Adam who... really takes to the band and trying to make it what it eventually becomes, because out of all of them, he was the one that Bono describes as having the ambition and the desire to really be a musician. He talks about how for him, there was no alternative. That's what he wanted to do. That's what he always thought of himself as doing and being. So he was going to make it work no matter what. So they start gigging and they start putting themselves out there. And it was Adam who essentially was organizing all of that. And the name U2 was given to them by a friend of Adam's, actually, who was in a punk band. And he thought it should just be a simple and direct name. And what's more simple and direct than a letter and a number? So U2 it is. And they start performing and doing lots of different gigs. Is there anything you want to add, Christian?
I love watching you tap dance out there without a wire. I love it. This keep going. No, this is magic. Keep going.
So they then go to London.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I'm giving sort of...
I think I got to interrupt though. It's Larry that posts the ad, right?
Yeah, Larry. Did I not say Larry?
I might have misheard. I thought you said Adam is the one that.
No, no.
Adam
I said
is the one
Larry
pushing,
posts the
right,
ad,
okay.
But
Adam.
Who's Adam is really the one who is trying to get their name out there, because for him it was all about becoming a band. It was all about being a rock star. That's what he wanted to do. That's what he envisioned himself as being, and so he was going to get to that one way or the other. So he's really driven to become one and for the band to really, you know, take off. So they are doing this and they go to London and they are handing out our Bono and his girlfriend at that point is then later to become wife. They go to London together and they're passing out demos and some people take to them, but most of the people are just not all that interested. In particular, he tells us John Peel, who those of you who know or recognize that name know. He was very, very key in creating the careers for many bands. But Bono tells us that he was never really interested in U2, not at the beginning nor even later once they've become U2. So they are handing out demos. They're trying to get a record deal. People are not really showing a whole lot of interest. When they return back to Ireland, the press has sort of mixed reviews about them, saying like they're the next big thing and they've just come back from London and things are going great. And Bono tells us, well, that really wasn't the case. You know, people were very lukewarm about us. No one really cared. And it's not until sometime later that they do end up getting the record deal, which is signed in a bathroom, in a venue, in a ladies' restroom. But it did take a while for them to even get a record deal. And it was very, he talks about how it was just very humbling. And it's something that kind of has stayed with them always, really, which is surprising to hear him say. But nonetheless, he does share that with us.
Thank you for joining us, everybody. It's been another episode of the Rockstar Autobiography Podcast. So a couple of things are interesting to me is that you're not going to read many rock and roll autobiographies or stories where a central crisis within the band that almost breaks them up is that one of them is feeling that his faith and his belief system and his behavior, his relationship to God is being impaired by the band. And that's what we discovered that before. I think they're kind of getting near the cusp of some kind of success. But it's hard. You know what? Okay, I'm going to table that thought. The edge is he's hanging out with a guy who's very devout in his faith. And the guy puts in the edge's mind, hey, is this secular success something that God really wants for you? Is that something you should be seeking? And it really it resonates as a message with the edge. God, what grown man still uses that name? Whatever. So he almost leaves the band. I think he does. He actually says, I'm out for a while. And Bono says, well, I'm out too if you're not in it, dude. But you two are such an unusual band as well. If you consider the scales of their success, the heights that they've reached, and for their internal story to have issues like this is novel. It's different. We're used to reading about, you know, here's the 37th orgy, here's the heroin needle. With you too, it's such a different story. It's at the edge saying, I don't know if God wants me to do this. You know, that was a new chapter in rock and roll storytelling, that was something different.
Right. And Larry and Bono then start questioning that too.
Well, can I say something? It's interesting. Yes. As I was hearing you talk about Larry and Adam, it's interesting that I'm going to say it, and I hope, you know, I'm just going to say it, that it was, it's Adam. No, I always get Larry and Adam confused. You two?
Larry's the drummer.
Okay, it's Adam, the one who's the upfront atheist. He's like, let's be successful. You know? He's like, let's make some money, boys. And it's funny, when they become super successful out in LA, he's the one still riding the wave. Like, this is awesome. And I never, you know, it's funny. We don't get really sense. I didn't of really the other band members too much, except for maybe. You get some impressionistic images of them. But the image I got of Adam, even when they're successful, he didn't seem to be like a total hedonistic dickhead or anything. Even that member within their band, so far as Bono tells us, isn't a jerk. He's not out of control. He's not, I'm sure, I mean, God knows what these people are up to at that level of power. But even he, within the story of U2, seems to be, I don't know. What do I know? I don't know anything. All I did is read Bono's book. But
you know, I do want to point something out that while, yes, you know, their strong faith almost breaks up the band in a sense. Later, one of the things that Bono does share is that while he is very much a believer, and so are the other three members, Larry and The Edge, he also acknowledges the fact that he prefers the company of non-believers, he tells us.
Yeah, it's funny.
And he talks about, in the larger context of some of the things that he shares with us, what he really comes down to saying is that, you know, sometimes he's just conflicted, right? And that was sort of the conflict, the internal conflict mm-hmm. That the three of them were experiencing, because mm-hmm. on the one hand, they had this really strong faith and they thought that by looking for success and the material success that fame and all those things bring,
sure.
it was being contradictory to their belief system. And it seems as though that's something that there is still some grappling with, you know, and he talks about this, that point of, you know, on the one hand, I'm a believer and I have all of these thoughts, et cetera, but yet I prefer the company of people who yeah. aren't, because he says, you know, sometimes people who believe, that's all they talk about, and yeah. it can become too much, right?
Right.
And what I found curious about that was the fact that he talks so much about so many of the things that are important to him, right? Which mm-hmm. again, he has every right to do so. But I wonder if he acknowledges the fact that that can also be perhaps tiresome to some people who also like their music, right? So there's that mm-hmm. sort of duality in his own personality and the contradictions. But I guess that's just being human. So you can't really hold it against anyone. I think there's always those contradictions in everyone. You know, on the one hand, you can be one way, but then you also have these other thoughts, and everything is just, that's why we're all a mess, right? I mean, I think that's what it comes down to.
Correct.
But it was interesting to me too, Christian, that, you know, in other books, there's been other things that break bands apart.
Right.
And in this case, it was faith of all
yeah.
things, which I
yeah.
guess that in and of itself makes sense too. You know?
Sure. I guess. Yeah. I mean, these things, they're always fluctuating, and sometimes if
right.
they're not in sync, well, there you go. So our famous lost episode, and maybe somebody's going to find it on my computer one day. Of our first recording, we had a hard time with talking about the book that time too, and for the same reason I think we are this time, it's because yeah. there's no meat for us to chew on and talk about.
Right.
He's a very impressionistic.
There's facts and things, but yes,
he, for instance, when he talks about the edge, he doesn't tell us anecdotes. He just says the edge is the light within the darkness. He's the noise within the quietness. I don't know what to do with that.
I love
you know?
It. I find it very romantic.
Oh, not me. Oh my gosh. And you know, that's a great way of putting it. The book is very romantic.
It is.
In that regard. And so he's flowing with his feelings all the time about, but
yes. And I appreciate,
and like,
you know, I appreciate all that.
Look, if you're a Bono fan, you're gonna love it. But if you want to know really much about his life, I don't think you're going to get a lot. And you're certainly not going to get a lot about you too, because I know we talked about this the first time. And I remember I had the same experience the second time. He'll casually say, oh, now we were recording the Joshua Tree. I'm like, whoa, because I had
yeah.
no sense. He fails to give, I don't even think he tries to give you a sense of the band's escalating growth, of their fame, of their success. So you're isolated in this bubble with him, and he's just speeding you along with his feelings and notes. And suddenly he'll just say, yeah, now we're up the Joshua Tree. And as a reader, as a passenger in his vehicle, you're like, whoa, whoa, we are? How did we get here? Because I didn't get a sense of anything else. I got a sense of your feelings about the qualities of Edge's quietness within the solitude of his...
I love that.
You know, it's useless.
And you know what, Christian? Reviewing this book a second time and looking at it and you know, looking at certain passages and things, I have to say that I appreciated the romantic quality of it a little bit more than I did
the first
time. Because I think the first time we read it, I was going in like, okay, give me the story,
right.
give me the juice, right? I want it. And having known that I wasn't going to get that, I was kind of looking at
okay.
it a little bit differently this time around. And so it was all of those lovely things that he says about his bandmates. You know, at one point he talks about how without them, he's nothing.
Yes.
And it's all very
yes.
dramatic and very beautiful.
Yes.
And it's very, you know, the language that he uses
everything
to describe
is
that.
Do or die,
saying, you know,
man.
That-
yeah. With romantics, everything is do or die, life or death.
Yes, it's
yeah.
so like over the top.
Gosh.
And so he talks about how without them, he's just an empty vehicle and there's nothing, you know?
It's like,
I'm just like, oh, my God, just give me this.
I bet this guy would describe a Subway sandwich that way, probably. It had the intensity of the flavor without the silence of the tongue. You know what I mean? It's like, what are you talking about? I thought we were having a Subway sandwich. We are.
And I love 12, it. You know, yeah. I eat all that shit up. I just love it. I love it.
12
love
inches
it.
Of infinity.
I mean, I can laugh about it. But, you know, down deep, I've always said that even though I can be somewhat cynical externally, deep inside, I am a huge romantic. Yeah. And so I love all this stuff, even though it cracks me up and I'm like, oh, you're laying it on a little too thick now. But I just love it and I eat it up.
Keep it coming.
Yeah, more. Yeah. It's like, oh my God, this is such bullshit, but I want more. Give me more butter on the bread.
Don't stop. Don't you dare stop.
Don't stop. Give me more of this.
This is how you talk about a Diet Coke. How do you describe, you know? It's just, I cannot handle it.
And I want to read, I have to look for the page because I have to read like some of the stuff that he says because it was really very lovely. Christian, if you said those things about me that Bono says about his bandmates, I'd be like, wow, that's so sweet.
She's the,
Instead, it's like, no, she's terrible to work with. She is so demanding.
She's the blue within my red. She's the bass note within the treble. It's just like, gosh, give it a break.
Oh my God. It's hysterical.
You know what, though? Having made a second pass at it, though, there was a portion where I think it's Live Aid. I get that confused with one of the other, you know, Let's Raise Money, Feel Good About Ourselves shows that all the rock musicians perform. So there's the famous one where, you know, each band gets two or three songs to perform, and it's a very limited amount of time. And they decide to perform Bad, okay? Which is, it's still a great song to this day. I love it. But he decides to do his Bono thing and get out with the, he gets off stage and runs, gets out. He gets like 25 miles away from the stage. He gets so far away from them to bring his message to the people, you know, to really be amongst them. And he's criticized by some, I think it's his bandmates. So like, do you have to do this every time? You know?
Yeah.
He does make a point though. And I realize as much as I'm not a fan of experiencing this in a book, his response is, isn't that what rock and roll is to make a spectacle of yourself? And I did take away that it's his job to, this is his function in the band. He's the Eddie Vedder. And he's like, you guys get to do don't have to move. You get to just play your guitar on the stage and you get to do but I bring the romance. I bring the drama. And the second time around, I did have to check myself and go, that drama, as much as it's irritating in print to me in such a concentrated way without any stories, it is what you hear in With or Without You
I want is you. That's another
the dude
great
is in
one.
It, man. His heart is on his sleeve and he believes it. And
And that's why those songs are those big hits that they are, because he lays it all out. And, you know, I have to say, Christian, I'm telling you, rereading this and looking at it again, it gave me a different take on
him as a person. Yeah.
For me personally, you know, when he lulled me to sleep while I was on that flight, I thought, you know, Bono managed to calm my nerves on that flight. So I don't know. I think I have feelings for him now.
the romantic wins out. You always come around.
The romantic wins. The romantic won my cynical heart.
Yeah,
what can I say?
As Martha and I were rediscussing the book, we were both dreading part two, where there's not a mention of rock and roll in sight. It's all about apartheid. Any human rights activity that exists, Bono has been there and he has made himself known. But again, I saw it a little differently because when they're recording With or Without You, they go, I don't know where Bono goes. He just goes, you know, somewhere to wherever rock stars go to feel great about themselves. Like, I don't mean to be the cynical, but I am. I don't have to tell you. You're cynical in your way, Martha. I am in mine. Okay. I forget where it goes, but it's completely poverty stricken. I mean, it's not even third world. It feels like it's a fourth world country. And I got to admit, while I'm reading the book going, here's Bono again. He's playing the poverty role when it suits him, knowing he can return to being rich anytime he wants. However, when he comes back to the band, these are the stories he brings to With or Without You, to Where the Streets Have No Name, to...
Right.
And I couldn't argue with success. I couldn't argue with the results that if okay, dude, you know, I guess maybe this is what the band feels like. It's like, we're not going to necessarily be joining you on this mosquito laden trip to wherever you're going, or to whatever White House venture you've got up your sleeve. But this is who you are. And when you come back, you do bring with you the elements, this element. And I guess I wouldn't argue anymore. I wouldn't roll. You know what I wouldn't do anymore? I wouldn't roll my eyes. And I, the first time I read this book, oh my gosh.
That's how I felt too. The first time, Christian, that's how I felt too. And this second time I didn't, I have to admit, I really didn't, at least not to the degree in which I did the first time. He's really in it. The guy is passionate about the things that he cares about, and I can never pass judgment on that. When people are truly passionate about what they believe in, I admire that passion, right? I mean, hopefully it's to do some good in the world. And in his case, I feel that whatever any of us thinks about all the causes that he takes on and all the things that he does, you know, his heart is in it, right? And he wants to do good. And part of it goes back to his faith as well. So there are things there that are not, it's not sort of just empty. And it's allowed him to make and to write, you know, to write amazing songs. True. And that's unquestionable, and that's undeniable. That he has written songs, like you said early on in the episode, Christian, that I think many of us, we just hear the title and we know the melodies, mm-hmm. we know the everything, right? We just know them. And so, you know, how many of us can say that? How many of us can
Very
say
few.
That?
Very few. That nakedness, I guess if you want the guy who, I mean, when he hits the chorus, the ultimate chorus of With or Without You, which is basically him just wailing, you know, it's just like him going for that's emotional nakedness of a highest level.
Yeah.
And I think it comes hand in hand with being that way everywhere you go.
I mean, it can be a little overkill, but it helps him with his creative process, with his creativity, with his artistic everything. And so, you know, and he does, you know, going back to what you said a short time ago, he talks about that, you know, whereas the other guys have their instruments, he just has himself. And he talks about that. He talks about how he's taken a few guitar lessons, but that's not his thing. He doesn't know how to play guitar. He doesn't know how to play any instrument. He doesn't know how to do anything other than write and sing. And but that's a lot. So he brings a lot.
He brings
to the
a huge
band.
Amount.
And that's where he you know, throws flowers at his bandmates by saying that without them, he is just an empty vehicle because he can't do what they do. And so they're truly
they are. I would be the first, even though I've mocked him relentlessly, to say this man is, well, I mean, he's unquestionably indispensable. All those melodies he's come up with, all the,
gosh,
it's ridiculous.
Of course. Yeah.
In fact, I think he's actually very modest. You and I have read books where they're written by people who've contributed about 15% to the overall success. So they're always so hungry to discuss in depth their contributions they've made. Remember John Oates' long discussion of the one guitar part he came up for? It's because, you know what I mean? He needs to validate. But Bono's very modest. He just casually says, I forgot my wife's birthday. I felt bad. So I wrote the song for her. And it's just one of like 35 amazing U2 songs that they were prolific for a while. They're beasts.
And man, that yeah,
that's
song.
My point. No, but that's my point. That song felt like.
I mean, if there is ever an apology, so, my God, are you kidding me?
The song is the sweetest thing, right? And it's like a B-side throwaway. And that was the level of creative, of outstandingness those guys were writing for a while. That they just could do no wrong. Angel of Harlem, I mean, even if it's a blues song, they just seemed to do it. And it was awesome. It was amazing.
Yes. And his voice.
His voice is Hall of Fame.
I mean, I think Bono has definitely got, in my opinion, I think he's got one of the sexiest voices in music. He does.
Yeah.
And it's so distinct. He's got such a distinct voice, character.
Aside from
the fact that it's a very sexy voice, it's very, very distinct too. Look, you know, Krishna, I think we're coming back with some love for Bono after rereading the book. I don't know that we were this complimentary.
I'm assuming you and I super lightly skimmed the second half of the book because it is utterly, it's so boring. It's like watching, I don't even know. It's so boring. I can't even muster the enthusiasm to think of something creative to say.
Well, the thing is that there's a lot of name dropping. And, you know, of course, he knows so many people, right? There's not a lot of detail.
There's never detail. Yeah. The problem I have with him, Martha, is and, you know, it's hard. Look, my personality is going to come out when we talk about these things. I can't help that, you know? With a certain kind of person who basically has conspicuous benevolence, it feels like a part of them is doing good because it makes them feel better. More than anything else. And it's not about the good they're doing for others. And the reason I bring that up is this man, I lost count of how many causes he raises the issue for the reader. He'll give you this intense description of what's going on with the armies in Nicaragua or whatever he's talking about, right? He talks about it as if you're interested in all these niches, but he talks about this niche. He gets really serious. I tell you, Martha, if you gave a couple of these pages to a third party and said, are you reading a book by a musician or a politician? They'd say, well, a politician, because there's no mention of music. It's just about the blightedness, the poverty, the infractions. And he gets really invested in a cause and talks about the progress he made, the promises he extracts from all these super famous politicians. Oh, you know,
he knows everyone.
Oh, yeah. And you know what I'm remembering now is just completely how little, like I already had very little to think of politicians to begin with. But this will make, I think if you've got any brains, it'll really cut it in half. Because for some reason, all these politicians answer Bono's phone calls. And treat him as if he's an emissary or a diplomat or an elected official instead of some rock and roll dude. And this,
right, he's got, yeah,
that's the part of the book that was so off-putting. It's like, who do you think you're not an elected official. When you say things like, my first thought was, how can I get into this next White House's administration's doors? Who, I mean, the ego involved.
Do you think presidents and those types of people would take our call, Christian? You think there'll ever be a point where they'll take our call?
No, I don't.
I have some things I want to discuss with a lot of
people. We should start calling
personally.
And just say we've got ideas.
Just cold calling the White House.
Yeah.
President Biden, I have some serious thoughts on a lot of things. Can we
serious,
talk?
Serious thoughts. Our listener numbers should be much higher than they are. And what are you gonna do about it? Get Condi on the phone. I mean, who talks like that?
It's like I want 3-day work weeks. How can we make this happen federally? Can you pass a law?
Yeah. That portion of the book, and it's half the book. It's half the book of him talking, using these names firsthand. Like, I'm talking to the president of Russia. Mikhail just dropped by to have tea. And
the killer part or the kicker of all of this is the fact that he is like on a one name basis.
I know. It's the worst.
It's crazy to me. It's
the
worst. How does that happen? Yeah. How does that happen?
And his whole phone is a Rolodex of all of these names, all of these people. He's having
And these aren't people that he just like calls casually or that he's met once or twice. These are people that, like Christian said, are on his Rolodex. You know, these are people that he is on a one-name basis with, that he can just pick up the phone and call or send a text message to. And like,
and what? He feels entitled to ask questions like, what are you going to do about the Serbia problem? What are you going to do about the lack of running water? What are you going to do about the surfeit of drugs and arms deal races? Whatever. Who?
Then he has a list, right? He includes, I love it when we read, I'm a list person. Yeah. Like, I like lists. And so I love when I come across these lists because they always crack me up, right? So he has a list in the book where he talks about, you know, ways that you can make a change.
Oh my gosh.
And it's like, well, we're not all Bono. Yeah. I don't know how much my words will impact. And granted, you know, I mean, we can vote, we can do all the things that are in our power to do. Right. But, you know, I don't know that I'm able to just call any person around the world and ask for a meeting and I'm going to get granted that meeting, Bono.
And you know what? If we're all equal, Bono, like you say you are, why don't you publish in your book, why don't you give me Condoleezza Rice's phone number? You've got it.
Why don't you give us their
You've got her phone number. Why can't I have it? Am I not equal to you? I'm not an elected official, neither are you. But somehow these elected officials, like, here's my personal phone number. Call me day or night and give me your thoughts on the deficit. And Bono incredibly does. I mean, are you kidding me? If somebody asked me for my thoughts on like policies with other countries, I'd say I don't.
I wish somebody would ask my thoughts on like the economy. All these other issues that I care about.
I'd say
the rising prices of gasoline.
I'd say, well,
My goodness.
I wouldn't have any thoughts whatsoever. But he thinks he does. And then you know what? This is symptomatic of the man. He really feels like he hops from cause to cause. And he just stays for like 6 months or five, really enmeshed in this one. And he finishes each segment by saying, you know, did we accomplish everything we'd hoped to? We didn't. But I really think that we massaged some progress towards a better direction that the installed establishment will better be able to reach. And we've opened up channels of communication with help. And then he just, next chapter, then I was in a part, you know, Africa, and now I'm working on curing AIDS. And he does that for 6 months. And did I cure it? I did not. But I think I really, you know, he just hops from cause to cause to cause.
And, you know, here is what I will say. You know, going back to what I said earlier, too, I appreciate, you know, his passion. I appreciate all of that. But again, I think that when you're writing a book, give us a little bit more detail. I mean, it was almost like he was just checking off the boxes of the things that needed to be mentioned, right? And again, I mean, this is his life. And, you know, and I was trying to think of this too as I was rereading it and just kind of, you know, looking through certain parts of the book more in more detail. But this is his life, you know, Christian. I think I said this before. Like, this is his life.
Well, he made this his life. He didn't have to.
Correct. Correct. Absolutely. Absolutely. 100%. But this is, there's so much, I think, that's going on with him that I do think that there's only so much that he can touch or that he can share in terms of, there's just so much that this would have been a 1,000 or 2,000 page book if you went into detail about every single thing he's involved with, because he's involved with so much. But the part of the book that also just kind of starts, that's not as impactful towards the end, is that, you know, he talks about all these different people, like Christian said, that he meets and that he goes into negotiations with, et cetera, et cetera.
And I bet he does, wearing that ridiculous outfit, all black leather and those ridiculous fly glasses. You know, he did.
Well, you know, the thing with the glasses that a couple of years ago came out is the reason he wears those glasses is because of his glaucoma. Like, he needs them to actually see.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So it's not even so much a fashion statement as much as he actually needs them because he does have glaucoma.
Okay.
And they help his vision. But nonetheless, you know, I felt that the latter part of the book anyway. And it's scattered throughout the book, but it really gets really heavy-handed towards the end of the book where he is just, you know, telling us about all the different people that he knows and all the different projects that he works on. And, you know, going back to what we said earlier, that a lot of it ends up feeling like journal entries, right? Towards the end, it does actually end up being a lot of that. You know, he tells us about how one night he can't sleep because the edge is in the room above his, and he's been like messing around with his guitar and playing the same notes like all night long, and he can't sleep. And then he moves on to like something else, like, oh yeah, and then this day I went and hung out with Stella McCartney, and oh, she's so awesome.
Geez.
And there were all these other famous people. And then, oh, and then this one day I was hanging out with Noel Gallagher, and oh, he's amazing. I think he's the best thing since Paul McCartney.
Oh, right, yes.
And then, you know, so he there's parts of the book that actually do end up, I imagine, literally being taken from his journal entries and make it to the book. So if you want to read some of those, you know, you can. But I do think that for a diehard Bono fan, I think that some people, Christian, will really appreciate this book. I do. I think that they, you know, I think that there are people who are just super fans.
And yeah, like
they, that they are just eager to learn as little or as much about a person that they really admire. And obviously Bono has
Bono's the dude.
A huge fan base. And so I'm sure that there will be a lot of people who will enjoy reading this book. For me personally, I enjoyed parts of it, but again, I wanted a little bit more.
Yeah, I cannot recommend it except to Bono fans who, you know, I've been such a fan of somebody that I would just loved just if they'd just drawn a handprint, I would have been like, oh my God, this is the greatest handprint I've ever seen. You know, I get that, but this is thumbs down for sure. I'm going to tell you, I had to reorder the book to reread it. And it's the hardcover is now 50% off on Amazon. And I don't think that,
really?
I don't think that's a coincidence.
What was that voice? I like
that's
that.
Just my, that's my
little
that's
song.
My
the little
hot tongue baby fly voice.
Oh, I like that.
I can get way high like he does too.
No, don't.
I can
do that.
I can hit the notes if you want.
You can. You do lemon. Do lemon. Do lemon.
Lemon's harder. Lemon. She worked in the sunlight. She
you know that
lemon.
Song.
That's a great song. Oh my God!
You're too funny. I've made fun of that song, but
I can't hit the high notes anymore. I'm trying.
But sometimes I go back and forth with that song. On the one hand, I'm just like, oh my God, that's
so good.
It's not terrible. It's not terrible.
It's not terrible. It's awesome. You kidding me?
It's not terrible.
That album is outrageously amazing.
And there was that one song, The Edge, has a song that I really like, and I rediscovered it when we were
NUMB numb.
Yes, I really like that. I really like that.
Yeah, that album is amazing. They're just, I mean, those albums are giant monsters. Monsters? They're, yeah. I wish, I just, anyway, I surrender, Bono. Yeah, I don't, that's it. If you love Bono, you're probably going to like the book. If you like reading, I don't know. You know, I really can't say that you will. That's just I don't recommend it. It's 551 pages.
Yes. You get a lot. And the photo of him on the cover is nice. He looks handsome.
Oh, well, let's just leave it there. The photo on the cover is handsome. It's nice.
He looks handsome in that photo.
Sweet. All right. Honestly, I'm just glad to have this behind us as we continue to move forward, Martha. We needed to get this. This was a missing homework assignment. It was not our favorite, but we had to tackle it, and we did.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah.
So go listen to some U2 now. Yeah. Maybe he'll have him sing you to sleep like he did me.
Yeah.
You know, just
do
that. Play one.
There you go.
All I want is you.
All I want is you.
Lull you and relax, and it'll be, you'll drift off to Bonoland.
All right, I got nothing more. Do you have anything else, Martha?
I don't.
I'm going to tell you, if you're listening, we never do this, but let's tell them what we're reading next time. Why not?
Oh,
yeah,
yes.
Go ahead.
We are going to be reading Will Sargent's books. And Will Sargent from Echo and the Bunnymen, the guitarist.
The guitarist from Echo and the Bunnymen. Hopefully the picture of his face on the cover is nice.
Maybe you look handsome
got
in that
it,
picture.
Got it.
I'm a huge Echo, and I will say that that book is my selection. I am a huge Echo and the Bunnymen fan,
yeah.
And so I'm very excited to read this book, or these books. We're actually going to be reading two.
Under the Full Moon, I Saw You, Martha.
Oh,
I'm excited.
What is it? Ian McCulloch said that's the greatest song ever written.
I like it. He's got that rock and roll ego. He's like, oh, I'm the greatest band ever in myself, by myself. I am a god. Love it.
Yes.
All right. Well, speaking for myself, thank you. I'm sure you probably thought the episode would be longer or be proportionate to U2's success and fame, but it is what it is. And that was our show. And I thank you for joining us.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.